Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the Neil and Kristen Davis Psychic Hour. Well, today we are talking about something and taking your calls for on-air readings. And we do have a caller in the queue we're going to get to in just a moment. But first, we want to invite everybody to follow us on our social media sites as well as on Blog Talk Radio. You can find our links to our other pages via the Neil and Kristen Baker Psychic Hour page on Blog Talk Radio, where you can also follow us. 914-338-0164 is the call-in number. And you callers, please press 1 to speak with us. And the number to talk further after the show, 562-596-7818. Let's bring on this caller, 805.
Hi, Kristen. This is Donna from California. How are you?
Hi, Donna. I thought that might be you. How are you?
Yeah, I haven't spoken to you guys in a while. I hurt my back. I pulled the muscle in my back, so it's been tough the last 3 weeks. I'm looking. Excuse me. I'm looking forward to the 2020, and I wanted to know if you had any messages for this year for me as far as romance or finances or anything like that.
Okay. Donna, what's your birthday again? I think she's a 9, but I'm not sure.
4/22/1954.
8, 18. She's a 9, right? 27/9. Yeah, I remembered. Okay. Donna, messages for, let's see what's going on with your birth date. Here, 1954. So you are 66, is that right? 1951. Yeah, you're 66 years old. You're 65,
well,
but you're turning
66. Yeah,
you're turning
April. Yeah, I'll be 66
this year.
Yeah.
Okay, she's not on it. So, she's not on the multiple. 63 was the change. So you're in the midst of a cycle of your master number, your 7th cycle of 9. Donna, what's just give us an update about what's been going on. I know there was a man that you used to talk to on the East Coast, but his family stopped that.
He died, and his sister came into the thing, and so nothing became of that. And I've just been living in Santa Barbara and helping out a 95-year-old gentleman, help him a couple hours every day, shower,
is that
and cook for him.
Is that a paid job?
Yeah.
So you do caregiving?
Mm-hmm.
And you live in an apartment?
Apartment, yeah.
Santa Barbara, she said?
She lives in Santa Barbara, yeah.
Well, you know, the element that you help older, really somewhat older men in healthcare does have some connection to your relationship with men. Now, that's in terms of healthcare. If you're considering a man on a romantic level, you have to really look. I'm sorry?
Oh, go on.
You have to look carefully at the way you've come in with karma with men. Obviously, part of this karma, it requires you to care for elderly men. So that's part of your karma with the male energy. The rest of it is about love. Now, in your day, you do have some controversy about energy with relationship. That's in your 22, which typically suggests that you might have some conflicts, challenges in the romantic department. However, because your master number is 9 and you're born in 54, which is a 9, and the 4 is echoed again from the month, the first number to the last number, you get to see it twice, and that's heart and balance. 5 is communication. Well, what this actually means is that at this point in your life, probably what you're going to be 66, is that what we said?
No, yes. Yeah, you're going to be 66 in April.
Yeah. You see, right now you had a change of 63. So you're looking at this situation where between 63 and 72, you're looking for romance. Right now you're at 66, which is a 12 or a 3 in that regard. It's somewhat a multiple of 9 because it's 3 years past 63. So right now, in this year of turning 66, there's a strong likelihood you're going to be in a relationship. But the question is this, how do we find it? Is it karmic? So mm-hmm. It just falls in your lap? Does the universe require you to go out and look for somebody? Do you have to be at a certain location? That would be the crucial question. The one hint towards this person would be that in the past relationships you've had, one of the men would have had to have some kind of interest in car racing or fast driving. So you'd have to look at your history, look at the men that have been in your life, and determine who comes closest to cars, fast cars, car racing, that kind of thing. That would be a place to start the search. That now we leap over to the future, which will have nothing to do with cars.
I thought you were going to say motorcycles.
Oh.
Motorcycles. But we're still in the same family. Is there anybody in the past relationships that fits that description?
Not with fast cars. No.
Anything with mechanical, anything with motorcycles, anything with in that genre, not necessarily a fast car, but did any of that type of work?
Well, actually, I had a friend, and he was into fast motorcycles, and he had a whole collection of cars, but nothing romantic. We were friends.
No, I just asked in your relationship with men and people you knew.
Yes.
Okay, so you've got one. That's all I want to know. That's all. I don't care about the sexual part.
Yeah, no.
I just don't know if you knew anyone.
Okay.
You're confirming that you did know someone who had a collection of motorcycles. He liked fast things. Okay. So that's not the relationship I told you, but that validates looking forward now.
So the next question is, Donna, how you get out to meet people. I remember you did some traveling. There were some workshops that you did a year or two ago.
Uh-huh.
And you were hoping to meet somebody on those trips,
mm-hmm.
but there was nothing that came of it.
No, pretty much all women. Yeah.
And so how do you socialize? What do you do?
Well, I go to the gym. Pilates class, that's mostly women. I read, I get out with a girlfriend a little bit, but just don't seem, I take classes here and there, but I haven't really even seen anybody that I'd be interested in.
How old were you when you knew this guy with the motorcycles? How old were you?
That was about 7-8 years ago.
7-8 years ago.
So you're about 57?
Which is
56?
She's on a multiple at that age, right?
54. But she was about 57.
See, the problem is someone is not going to just, there's not a destiny factor in someone just showing up in her life. She has to go out, and I think there needs to be more involvement in trying to find someone.
Maybe. Second question. Who did you know that was a loved beer? Big Budweiser, loved beer.
That would be an ex-boyfriend.
Okay. And how old were you then?
This was about 13 years ago.
Okay, about double where we were before. So we're going back,
yeah,
still further backward in time. See, sometimes you have to go backward to find out where you're going forward. Sometimes you do. So the validations we're getting, Donna, from the motorcycles, the fast cars, to the bud. Was this guy a big, he loved beer, he drank beer a lot? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Okay, so those validations establishes the premise that this year coming up, you're going to be in a relationship.
How it's going to come in is going to be,
we don't know yet. We don't know yet. We have to go by these obscure psychic images. For instance, when was the last, did you ever play game boards like Monopoly or?
Yes.
And can you give us a brief story about a game board or how they, did you collect them? Did you play it with a friend?
No, there were a group of people and they met together at a room.
Well, that's, now that starts to bring in the idea of how you're going to socialize with others and meet somebody. So that's the Monopoly piece.
Yeah.
Not
the
Monopoly piece.
We're simply on a psychic hunt. We're getting these validations. We're trying to bring something in for you. It's difficult, but we're getting validations. So this suggests that maybe you need to find a current interest group, which is what Kristen said. You know, but we had to, I had to backtrack and get a validation. That
in order
to
guide you and to go how to proceed in finding somebody. So
you might, you know, you might look, if you do video games or games online or something, that might be one way to start to, you get a partner and you play games together. You find a group online, a male in particular, who will be your partner in challenging you with games
or something in person.
Something.
I don't know if there's any groups or senior groups that she could get involved in where there's
people
that are interested. It might be better to do an in-person group, I think, than online, just because you never know what you're getting online. And when you meet someone face-to-face, there's, you know, there's less hidden in those encounters.
Right.
As far as your finances are concerned, you're working part-time?
Yes.
So, and you're at the retirement age, but you're still planning on working for some time?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Give me something to do.
Oh, okay. And are there any Social Security benefits you're collecting right now?
Yes.
And so there's a limitation on how much you can work, I imagine.
Right. I don't work that much. Yeah. 2 hours.
So as far as finances are concerned, what's your question exactly? Because it sounds like things are fairly fixed as far as what's coming in from your Social Security and how much you're allowed to work.
Well, in the past, I've been very lucky. I won a BMW. I won a trip to Taiwan. I won a trip to Hawaii. I won a trip to Tahoe. I won a trip to... where else? Hawaii, Tahoe, Taiwan.
Wow.
And I won.
You are lucky. We don't win anything.
Oh, no. I won $10,000 on a scratcher.
Wow. So you're looking for kind of a lottery type win.
I am.
Were you gonna say?
Yeah.
You're going to make it. Neil was going to make a joke. Actually, I won a gingerbread house once. I've won a couple things. Very, nothing of value. Nothing of great value, but.
We won a coupon for Frosted Flakes, and they didn't pay for the trip back and forth, but that was fun. If you can find a group that does games or something, that would be our suggestion. And finances, I have no comment about your finances. I mean, you seem to be lucky with things. I don't think you're in any dire need of finances. You have Social Security and you supplement it with work.
Yeah.
So right now the focus seems to be relationship. And do you play games still? Are you into that?
No, not really. No.
Well, find something.
Find something you're interested in.
be creative and find something that maybe relates to it, where a group of people play game. I mean, you're asking us psychically, this is what we're coming up with. It's worth a try.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
And then let us know. Let us know if something happens. If that route works, then you'll call us and say, hey, that was great. If it doesn't, then we'll figure something else out.
All right, Donna. Good luck to you.
Thank you so much, Kirsten. Thank you.
You're welcome. Take care.
Bye.
All right, Donna can join us on Facebook. I don't think she has, but maybe she will. Those accounts are linked on our Blog Talk Radio profile page. And we have a disappearing host. Hello.
Well,
what are you doing? No, we don't have a caller. So I don't know where we were on our last discussion, what we were talking about specifically.
I'll
go upstairs and do that.
Well, you know, we're always talking about something. What the difference does it make?
Yeah.
The idea is right now, I mean, we typically talk about the astral realm and past lives and energies out there. Well, there's also the idea of how the memory is coded. Our brain is a great place to store information, some of which is in the forefront, and then some of which is in the back files. We, even though things have happened to us and have left, at the moment, vivid impressions in our brain doesn't readily recall all events, but everything that's ever happened to us is imprinted in our brain. And when we die, I mean, everything is unraveled at once. When you die, you see everything all at once. It's remarkable, quite a remarkable experience to see that. But in the meantime, while we're alive in these bodies, we store memories, some of which we retain and some of which we don't. Some of the memories we retain are from the past, and we're great at recalling the past. Some of the others are more skilled at just knowing the present and having great details about the present. Some do both, but everything is stored there. Well, now we talk about repressed memories. Not only do we not recall certain memories that have no dramatic effect, we don't remember the first time we had a vanilla ice cream. Some of us do, some of us don't. And then some of us repress other things, such as rape, hurtful things that have happened to us that have caused trauma, that we don't recall the events. Currently in this Weinstein trial, women are coming up with details they didn't have before. But the brain can start to recall things. It doesn't mean that you're fabricating or inventing or fictionalizing the event. We tend to repress harsh memories because we can't cope.
Well, that's interesting because I don't know. I think people vary.
They vary.
People vary. I mean,
but
the theme is,
what do we repress? What do we not recall? Of course, some people remember every detail.
Yeah, that would be me. So it's hard to relate to the repression theme because I don't think, for me, I can't relate to anything being repressed in my memory.
And there are certain memories I've got from my, you know, 2 or 3 years old that are always being recycled in my memory that I'll never forget.
Yeah, I mean, I remember being a baby in the crib. I mean, that's my first memory. So, you know, I have a pretty accurate.
Yeah, and you keep playing them over. They're fresh. They're held in the forefront of the present moment, but they're retrieved from the backlogs of your life. Now, you're not going to remember everything, but everything is stored, some of which you recall, and they can be small, trivial things, and they can be very powerful things. But as we also get into the idea that sometimes we revisit the past and we collect things that we had formerly forgotten, well, what is the discussion really about? The discussion is about the soul. And how can we recall where we've been before we were in these bodies?
Which is, that's more of Alan challenge than recalling the present life details, in my estimation.
Because the credible evidence is, I mean, you know, maybe a 5-year-old is talking about World War II and naming people in the war that, you know, it's remarkable and all that. And then others say, well, I lived during Julius Caesar's time. I was Mark Antony.
Right. And that's, you know, right. So a child recalling or talking about World War II to me is more credible than, you know, an adult saying he or she was Julius Caesar or Cleopatra, which is, you know, an example we use a lot here on the show.
Right.
So
there was a 1 year where everybody was coming to me, it was Cleopatra in the past.
I know.
She had a lot of standards. But the idea that what can the conscious brain recover where the information is now held in the soul? Now, the soul's information doesn't have a brain. It has an energy, a vibrational energy. That energy can be exchanged over to the brain. So we have a sort of relationship between the consciousness of the soul and the consciousness of the body.
Right. So the brain has to translate that vibration accurately in order to store the memory or to access the memory of what that past life was. So it takes training to translate vibration.
It takes training. And some people go through past life regression, or some people feel it in their bones that they, where they've been before.
And that happens a lot in psychological, I mean, in certain psychological practices where people go through past life regressions. But I mean, that's how accurate the information that comes out of those past life regressions is debatable.
Yeah, you have to measure it in certain ways, but sometimes the experience is very real to the person, and that has some credibility because it ignites the person's consciousness. But the other thing that can be a lot more available to us is, why do things happen to us in our present lifetime that can't possibly be explained? That is a trigger to the past life. I mean, I'm of the idea that when we have that primal scream, when we're born and we have that slap and that scream because we're exchanging our lungs and having oxygen come in and the shock of that system. But there's also the developing brain. And the idea that we, when we first come into the world, we're beginning a long journey. Well, relatively speaking, a long journey ahead of us, of things that we have to encounter, things that we have to do. Now, it's my belief that the brain is coded with information as to what we have to do. And some of that is evident, and some of that isn't. Some things come by chance. They just occur, and some of us have great intuition and great knowingness, and we know we're destined for something. Maybe filled with obstacles, maybe not. But the brain that we are equipped with, the brain that we are given at birth, is a karmic brain too. The exchange of information that the brain gathers can slowly be transferred from the soul. It doesn't have to all be there. In other words, in our first year of life, we don't remember everything. We're on a learning scale again. We're relearning everything. And some people might say part of that is learning, part of that is instinct. But when we get into the word instinct, that we get into the core issue of what is imprinted in the brain that doesn't require so much learning as it does instinct. But instinct is a cousin to past life. It's coded. Our souls are individually coded with our unique experiences from past lives. And all of that information comes flooding in to the body. It's stored somewhat in the soul. But like I said, the soul has a connection to the brain.
Well, when we talk about instinct, then we bring up, you know, the idea of the animal kingdom and their instinct. But, I mean, can we say that the instinct of an animal is connected to a past life or a soul? Since, one, the animals don't have a soul, they're connected to spirit energy, as their soul doesn't get judged in the karmic, you know, there's no karma.
It doesn't have the same application.
Right, so it's different. The instinct of a human being is connected to past life, whereas the instinct of an animal is more a physical.
Yeah.
Manifestation.
Well, the typically breathes into the nostrils, nostrils, not mouth, nostrils, a living soul. Now it seems redundant. Not a dead soul. It's not a dead soul. It's a living soul. So if you say a living soul, you have to think, well, then are there dead souls? Well, according to Dostoevsky, there are dead souls. But the idea that a soul is dead is to imply that a soul is wandering.
That's exactly. And we were just talking about this on our last show, wandering souls with, you know, certain callers.
And Gogol, the dead souls and the dispossessed and great German literature, Russian literature that has been established through time, more on a social level. But the idea is implied that we there are souls that are, as soon as you say soul, you have something eternal. If you apply the word dead to it, you have a soul without a body. It's dispossessed, meaning it's not ready to be in spirit. And it's trapped between the spiritual world and the physical world. So it's a soul without a companion in terms of the effect of it being an earth companion or a spiritual companion. It's sort of in that limbo. When we get into a nostril, a living soul, we're establishing the fact that it's ordained towards the advent of being a physical being. That's going to be alive, but that possesses a living soul, meaning that the soul is active. So the active soul in the body is filled with active energy from the region of the soul.
Right. It's not to say also that wandering souls can't move from that realm of purgatory or limbo to another realm and be reignited with life and return to the body and be able to resolve their karma. So dead isn't necessarily permanent when we're talking about a dead soul.
No.
I mean, permanent dead souls. But
and areas where there can be transformation and changes, death and transfiguration being one of them. But the idea that these living souls that inhabit our body are also coded with the memory of the soul world. That means the memory of the astral realm as much as the memory of each landing that we ever had on the planet in whatever incarnation we experienced. So in all of these collection of energies, this also explains it in psychic terms. Why little boys think they're girls, why little girls think they're boys, and they almost, their manner, their affect, their personality, their expression is all mandated by the fact that they are, quote, and I know these are crude terms, masculine or feminine, but the idea that one's identity is contrary to one's physical being, in my estimation, is part of the result, aside from biological reasons,
of an unresolved past life situation,
or of a past life that needs to crowd into the present form. Now, it may be karmic that a little boy or a little girl is born as one gender but identifies with the other. That may present a conflict, and obviously, it is a conflict. I mean, society may make it less of a conflict in time, but needless to say, it's still a conflict. It's a conflict. So it provides for the fact that our souls are splintered. We don't come in as ingested with just one bound soul. We come in on an assemblage of energy that sometimes contradicts who we really are. As just as much as someone who's born into a long line of farmers is suddenly a unique painter and goes to Paris and is enlightened and becomes transformed into a famous painter, and farming has nothing to do with his life. Now, one may say, well, you know, that happens. Creatively, we're not all in the same package. But we're looking at the intricacies of what the personality does in its splintered form based on past life.
And it's not to say that someone who comes in a female body that wants to be a boy can't achieve wholeness within that one lifetime with that conflict going on. So that needs to be...
Yeah, it's
stated.
It's important, just as it is important in terms of movements. When you think about the Lost Generation and Hemingway and Gertrude Stein and people like this that formed a group, formed a movement. When you talk about any movement of people that gather together, in some way they're splintered groups, karmic groups, tribal groups. Groups that bring back consciousness from ancient times. We tend to think that the phrase everything old is new again. Well, when the world was created, there was already wisdom. There was already intelligence. All of this didn't. It evolved, but it evolved from a higher intelligence. And that intelligence evolved and maintained itself in a different realm.
Yeah, and getting getting into the idea of how the Earth was established and where this consciousness came from is another.
Yeah. I mean, it's overwhelming.
Topic.
We can't, if we thought about this, we wouldn't be able to get out of our chairs. We'd be too
overwhelmed with the concept.
Where we came from. What are we doing here? How did all this come about? And what was the purpose of it all? Well, some of us step aside and create theories and art forms and literature and research to try to explain the origins of the universe, not excluding astronomers and physicists and people like this, to try to understand. And what we do is we look inward and outward. We try to understand the origins of our planet by looking inward, and we try to understand the origins of the universe and where we might have come from by looking outward. So we have this inward-outward advancement of knowledge and research and discovery. Just as we, inside of ourselves, go inward with our immediate memories from childhood, from birth, and outward into our soul that captures other memories and where we've come from and what we've experienced and what has brought us here. So on a micro level, we look at the world, we look at the universe. On a macaroni. The whole caboodle of things, we are discovering that we also look deep into our journeys for whatever reason. Some of them may be pertinent to our immediate situation, like in the Weinstein trials where people are coming up, in the news, are coming up with these memories and drawing back on them, as much as people who are going on a thorough investigation, trying to discover their genealogy, their roots, trying to go back and figure out what happened to them in a period of time in their childhood, to people who are venturing forth into the outer limits and trying to discover where their soul has been and what memories they bring back from those lifetimes. So we look at that in a crucial way, and we have to understand that our present brain is coded with some of this vast information, maybe not all at once, and maybe it trickles down as other information is gathered and retrieved and processed, then new information comes in. So I think it's fascinating in terms of our language in the psychic realm, when we have to look at people, when we have to, like, for instance, that caller, Donna,
yeah,
and we have to go back to, you know, the motorcycle and the beer, and it brings up memories with her, and that they're all pertaining to men. And it's not in a vast, long period of time. It went back to about 13, 14 years, according to our questions. But it brings up certain attitudes about how we base that and then bring it forward into the present and then extend it into the future in terms of the question asked.
Right. And then when we talk about the progression of a person in his or her lifetime, and that trickle down, isn't that a theory, the trickle down theory? But I mean, I'm not speaking of that theory. I'm talking about, you know, the trickling down of past life content and how one proceeds through all of that, all of the information or content that's trickling down and what someone does in an individual lifetime, because dependent on one's progress, there's going to be more achieved in terms of resolving past life karma and establishing a transcendent energy based on what someone does. So there's that free will factor and how much is achieved and how much progress one will make in any given lifetime.
Yeah, it some of that may be inclined to karma too, because we're allowed to do only so much. We only have so much time, and some things take major priority. If you spend a lifetime battling mental illness and your whole life is conducted on the premise that you are mentally ill or you have a psychological problem, and every day you have to wake up and fight this depression or fight this psychosis or whatever it may be, that is one form of karma, as opposed to somebody who wakes up and wants to sell real estate every day and they don't even consider mental illness.
And that person may not consider mental illness, but on the same token, even though they may be very motivated to sell real estate and excellent in their job, they don't think about spirituality at all. So, you know, there's different degrees of
someone progression. Obsessed with relationship, that's all they think about, relationship. And then someone who says, I have no time for relationships, I just want to make money, I go to business, I don't really need a relationship. And then some people say, I can't live without a relationship. I don't know how you do it. I don't know how you exist. Some people have high sexual needs and some people have low sexual needs. And it goes on and on and on. Some people are obsessed with food, somebody who could care less about food. We all come from this diverse and yet cohesive universe of a variety of energies, where each of us hold an individual karma that we come into the world with, and we have to play that out, for better or for worse. And sometimes it's something that we need to conquer, and sometimes it's something we need to internalize and keep within our soul. And not let it go until the end of our physical existence. But the compartment, aside from the heart and the lungs, the compartment that contains this information is the correlation between brain and breath. Because the breath, to me, not only opens up the idea of awareness, but it opens up the idea of the third eye. It opens up the idea of higher consciousness. So our very breath is karmic. Some of us have great breath. Some of us have shallow breath. Some of us have bad breath. Some of us have minty breath.
What'd you say? The last one?
Minty.
You say? Minty.
Our cat has two of them. We're vegetarian, so we have.
Oh, it's horrible having to feed her.
With a little bit of coffee. But the idea that actually, when you think about breath, we're not talking about through the mouth. We're talking about through the nose.
Right.
Cocaine. We're discussing cocaine.
Which we'll be doing a little of after the show. Keeps us going throughout the day.
But the idea that
you know, people could actually, sorry, it's dangerous to say anything like that, because with technology these days, people could splice things together and make it
we're not cocaine users.
We're making a joke. It's
the only
a joke.
I put in my nose is my finger.
or my finger. Okay.
But the idea that that our breath is something that it comes from the oxygen of the planet. I mean, we're breathing in oxygen, so it's outside of us. But as soon as we take it in, it goes into a course of energy that becomes part of who we are. You know, there was this the idea that can a man be swallowed by a whale and survive like Noah? So they did this test to determine what happens if we're swallowed by a whale.
Jonah. Not
Jonah.
Noah, we're getting confused with the water stories
here. No, actually Noah fell out of the boat one day and he was swallowed by a whale. The whale burped and he went back out on the ark.
No.
That's the story. Same thing happened to the crocodile.
No, it was Jonah as whale. Okay, Jonah.
So, but what happens? Now, if a man or a woman is swallowed by a whale, if they can get, they have razor sharp teeth, these sperm whales. So if they can get past the idea of not being crunched and sliced and diced alive, and they go into the element of the whale's throat, what they end up is, first of all, there's very little oxygen there, and there's a lot of acidic acid and everything. And
acidic acid, as opposed to just regular acid.
All kinds of acid.
Stomach acid, bile.
Compromise the breath, and it starts to burn away the skin. And then they get into, if they can survive that, imagine, if they can survive that, then they go into the stomach. A whale has four stomachs. So it goes into the first stomach, and there's sometimes plankton in there, and they're lighting up. So there's some light in the first stomach. But if they can get through that, they ultimately, what happens is they end up going through the three consecutive stomachs. Their skin just burns away. And then they're poofed out the whale's anus as bones. You don't survive.
Fantastic.
So being in a
discussion,
you can be held in one of the stomachs for a couple of days, but you actually go through a process of deteriorating, and it's brutal. Your skin burns down to the bone, and all kinds of things happen. You can't breathe. I mean, imagine. So you don't really survive. Why are we bringing this up? I don't know. How the hell do you know why I thought of it? But it's an interesting topic.
You know what? Yes. I wish I would have announced at the beginning of the show that we were going to be discussing the rectums of whales.
Rectum of whales and whale's anus. But the idea that – I don't know why I brought it up. I brought it up because of oxygen. And how we take things in.
And how common it is for people to be swallowed by whales.
Well, yeah. But we have a system too. And when we breathe in, that energy goes into our brain. And our brain is either enlightened by energy or it starts to deteriorate that which we have conditions of karma with. So it's interesting the way that we arrange our breath throughout any given moment of the day. Sometimes our breath is actualized and realized. If you look at a guy diving off of a high dive and he takes that first breath, there's a meaning behind that breath, as opposed to someone who takes a deep breath because he's about to ring the doorbell and give his girlfriend flowers for the first time, as opposed to someone who takes a deep breath because they just almost were in a car accident. Or they have a paper to study. The breath is composed of thought. And when the breath comes into the body, it meets that thought. It meets that experience. And the breath is transformed. It either is enlightened or it deteriorates into something that's horrible. We there talk about waterboarding and the gasping of breath and these simulated drowning. and people convulsing and throwing up and fighting for breath. And if you've been under a pile of bodies, like in football, for that moment when you're fighting for breath, as opposed to being on a mountaintop and taking a deep breath and breathing in the mountain air, it all depends. That breath is combined with the thought content in the environment. Well, our brains are an environment. Our brains hold the mountain, the ocean, the desert, suffocating, enlightenment. Our brains hold all of that information. And when we take a breath in, that breath enters whatever region of the brain that is being activated. So in the idea of taking a breath of a past life regression, or taking a breath to retrieve a memory, whether it's something we want to, sometimes they say that the memory of a person outlasts the physical presence of the person. I remember them more than I actually can have the encounter of having them in the physical space. Our memory holds energy that can make us feel as though we're in the present moment. And that goes along with visualization. So when visualization is applied to breath and memory, then we have an actual experience. And we experience in any given moment of time something that is very real. And the premise is, there's a possibility to do that with a past life.
Right. So that brings an idea of meditation, guided breath work, things like that, to bring those past life memories in, which can be done on your own. They can be done with a qualified psychic, someone who can help guide you through, psychologists, obviously, we mentioned that earlier.
Exactly.
Or on your own. I mean, I guess if you, you know.
The study is, I don't know.
Manage.
There's been studies done, but I remember being in school and taking tests, and I felt comfortable taking tests, but I would look over at my fellow students and look at them pondering and taking breaths of air, trying to recall, for those that studied, trying to recall the answer. In that moment, I recall this vividly. In that moment, I'd look at them and study their breathing while they're trying to recall the answer. Sometimes it was a facial expression, sometimes they were deep in thought. But for those that looked up, that took a breath in order to recall what they had been studying in relation to the question being asked, that was a perfect metaphor for me that I observed in terms of trying to recall not only a memory, but a past life. And how the variation of that breath changes. Now, when I was a kid, I would actually see the energy of the people trying to recall. So I'd see their auras. I would see their energy and how it transformed from, I would see one guy who was taking a test and his aura was dark. Sure enough, he got an F on the test. I saw another kid whose aura was light. And when the papers were handed out, that person got an A. So the auras of an energy, the clarity of an aura can signify the clarity of thought and of recall. What was that movie, Total Recall? Well, Arnold Schwarzenegger, some science fiction based on a science fiction novel, but total recall. So can we have total recall in the terminology of not only our immediate life, but our past life?
Well, then we get into the idea of the aura. And what are those cameras that capture the aura, supposedly?
Yeah, those, I forget the name. P or something.
But, you know, you mentioned two people in the classroom. One's dark, one's light. But the aura is not a static. It changes. It's movable. So, you know, a person who may have a dark aura while taking a test because they're doing poorly on it might have a lighter aura, you know, when it involved in playing a sport that he or she is good at, you know, later in the day. So the aura is not something that is a fixed energy.
No, it's not a fixed.
So, you know, capturing an aura is kind of meaningless when in using that photography. Was Kirlian photography?
No, it's photosynthesis. No. No, I can't. I don't know.
I'm going to look it up.
There's a term for it.
It's
But When we talk about auras and how energy is held within the breath, I remember looking at one professor in school, and because he gave these long lectures, I was able to stare at him for a long period of time. And every time I looked at him, he transformed into this hideous wolf. Not that wolves are bad. Some energies in the third eye, yeah, when a person appears as a wolf. When a person appears as a wolf, that can be a good thing, very good thing. But this person appeared as a demon wolf in my third eye. Ugh. Well, later, the person was arrested for sexual abusing the students. Now, when I saw the energy of the person in terms of the breath and the hideousness of the transformation, I knew there was something dark and bad about the person. Later, it was revealed that he had sexually molested some of the students and his trial. But the idea that our breath transforms our being, it reveals who we are. It signifies our state of mind and condition. What were you going to say?
I was going to say it is Kierlian photography. That's what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I remembered correctly. It's Kierlian photography.
I thought it was a PRS.
No. I mean, maybe there's a different type of camera you're thinking of, but
it captures
the one that captures the aura. Anyway.
Yeah, and then the colors correspondingly. But so, you know, we're kind of talking about a couple of things: memory, current memory, past memory, soul memory, the idea of how breathing intervenes with thought, and how we reach out in any one given lifetime to rediscover who we really are and where we really came from. Because there's a purpose why we all are on the planet. We're just not by here by accident. Sure, we could say copulation and all that, use those terms, but there's a reason behind our energy. If we were just a social unit like an ant, and we were born just to perform a task, then that would be one thing in terms of the social structure, in terms of etymology. But if we have to consider that when we are on the planet, we start to have these various interests. And the various interests, in most cases, formulate into a pattern, into a profession, into an occupation. So they say, what is your occupation? An occupation is that which occupies us, that which envelops and defines who we are by a legal standing. So an occupation, typically it's hard to answer on a piece of paper, well, my occupation is reading. But somebody be occupied by reading, as opposed to my occupation is I'm a fireman. So we're defined by these certain things, but all of this amounts to the variation in our energy levels, into the genetic attitude of our energy levels, that is a continuum of where we've come from.
Right. Then, you know, getting into the idea of people who are in occupations that they don't want to be in, but they have an art form that they wish they were occupied in, as far as what they're paid to do, and the karma of why someone isn't, you know, doing what they love and are forced to, you know, be a maid or a banker or whatever. But that's, you know, another discussion.
Yeah, a lot of our colors. So there's a lot of the struggling class, they call it, that is struggling with life, occupation wise and
relationship, etc.
And this conference that ultimately results in some kind of hopefully psychic consideration that establishes a premise is also part of the struggle we have with karma, with why we're having difficulties, and can these difficulties be surmounted and overcome so that we can establish and experience our desires and the fulfillment of our quests. So all of that comes from the idea, I think, that originates in the attitude of breath and how we bring that breath through our system and how we come out of the whole of life. Because we do come out of a hole, in essence.
And we are discussing every body part.
We're discussing every
today.
Body part.
Okay.
The hole we come out of hopefully isn't the hole that we end up in the well. But
okay, anyway. All right. Now we're going to be wrapping up. Enough is enough. We're back on the air on Friday at... I'm sorry. Today is Friday. We're back on the air on Wednesday, 9 a.m. Pacific, 12 p.m. Eastern. Oh, as an added note... Again, I received a report of people having difficulty or a person having difficulty with Apple Podcasts. I'm not having the same difficulty. I do think it's software specific, but those of you who are having difficulty may want to contact Apple about your podcast app, because deleting the whole app and then having to reinstall it every time you want to listen to the show isn't exactly a convenient process. So if you're having trouble with the podcast app, definitely get in touch with Apple about that, and have a great weekend. Bye.